Life Management Science Labs would like to acknowledge that we live and produce this podcast on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. We'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands of our listeners and our international colleagues. We'd like to thank and pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Room by Room, the Home Organization Science Insights podcast, produced by LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. We are champions of life management science, providing structured insights informed by science and inspired by practice on key aspects of conscious living. Each week, we bring you scientific and practical insights on each element, with expert knowledge from professionals in the field. I'm your host, Gabriella Yastra, coming to you from NAM, Melbourne, Australia. Let's get started. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, we're going to be talking about how to organize your to-do list with Lisa Woodruff, who is the CEO of Organize 365 and author of Organization is a Learnable Skill. Hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining me. I think this is going to be great. I think that everyone needs a to-do list, or maybe that's what not. I guess we'll learn. But I certainly do. But before we do learn more about this topic, can I get you to introduce yourself so we get to know you a little bit better?
Sure. My name is Lisa Woodruff, and I live in Cincinnati, Ohio, in America. And I started my company in 2012 named Organize 365. At that time, I was turning 40, and I was transitioning out of being a stay-at-home mom and a former teacher into an entrepreneur. I started as an in-home professional organizer with a blog, and then became a podcaster, and then created online courses, and here we are today.
Great. So you've certainly done a lot.
Well, the older you get, the more you do, right?
I guess it all builds up. So we'll also do a little section that we like to call Have You Met Lisa, where we find out a few of your favorite things. So what is your favorite book?
My favorite book is called Generations by Neil Howe and William Strauss. And it really talks about the American generations and that there are four generations that just repeat over and over and over again. And they trace them all the way back to the American Revolution and how you kind of see that play out over time. So I'm Gen X, which was born from 1965 to 1979. And typically our generation never has a president. So like baby boomers are older than us, like Joe Biden and President Trump. And then millennials are younger than us. The oldest millennials are just turning 40 and 41. And even when you look at in the United States, the presidential lineup for the next race, most of them are really old or really young. And our generation just typically does not usually have a president. So there are such interesting things about each generation. And to know that there are archetypes for American generations is just fascinating.
That's so interesting. I wonder, I guess it's because maybe one generation causes the next generation, and because it's like that, it's sort of this cycle. But what about Obama? I don't know how old he is. Is he
he's a baby boomer? Yes. So the baby boom generation is a little bit bigger than other generations. And then obviously there are a lot of them. So when World War II ended, then all the GIs came home and they had very large families. So like my dad's the oldest of six and my mom is the oldest of five. But all of those children, the largest families had four, and there's only one of those, but many of those children never even had children. So the Gen X generation that I'm a part of, we're a very small generation. Actually, in the United States, we were only the largest generation in the workforce for 3.5 years.
What? That's no time at all. Like,
and decades and decades, it's baby boomers. For 3.5 years, it was Gen X, and then we've already been eclipsed by millennials. There are not a lot of us. We were the latchkey generation. We were the first generation where abortion was legal in the United States, things like that. And so the families were very, very small in the 70s, and you had like a lot of political things going on. And we're only a 15-year generation. We're not a 20-year generation. So because I study so much about what's going on in American homes, I see a lot of like how baby boomers talk and millennials talk and Gen X talks and how they talk to each other and what they value and how they value their things. And so I just love studying generations.
That's so interesting. I've never thought about it like that. I think I'm going to have to go read this book and
pick one.
And then, yeah. And then I'll see how it, because it's so interesting that as well that you've taken what's in the book and applied it to your own life and to your own experiences. I really love that. But our next question is, what movie have you enjoyed recently?
Okay, so we go from that really deep like book to like this totally super frivolous answer. And it's Top Gun. You know, they remade Top Gun that was an 80s movie with, it's not Tom Hanks.
Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise, right. I knew it was a Tom. And yeah, so that was a really fun movie. Nothing intellectual there, let me tell you.
Look, you got to have balance. You got to have brain days. You got to have no brain days. And do you listen to any podcasts?
I am obsessed with podcasts. Like, I pretty much only listen to podcasts and audiobooks. I have so many podcasts I listen to for so many reasons. But one that I found recently and is just really specific to what I'm learning about right now is called the PhD Life Raft podcast. I'm starting to get a PhD, so there are just a few PhD podcasts out there, and I really like that one.
I would never have thought there would be a PhD podcast, and I just love that I get to learn about a new, different area that I never thought there would be a podcast about.
There aren't many.
No. Okay. Well, that's, I guess, good and bad. Bad, there's not many resources, but good because you've got something there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And do you have a role model?
You know, there are so many people that I watch and admire and follow. But if I had to pick like just one that I would say I consistently go back to time and time again, it would be my mother, because she continually reinvented herself throughout her lifetime, but she didn't even realize she was doing it. And I don't think any mother really realizes how much their children are watching what they're doing. And I love how she just never, it never occurred to her that she couldn't do things, like that she wasn't allowed or didn't have permission or whatever. Like, she just lived her life, and she literally started a business from nothing when I was in second grade and then sold it when I was in eighth grade and then like went on to do her next thing. Like, and it was just like, yeah, this is what you do. She took a credit card to New York and started buying things wholesale and then just like started a company. Like, who does this?
That's amazing. And I think such a good role model for you because as you were saying that you were a stay-at-home mom and you were a teacher and then you changed your, you know, career path altogether. So what a great role model for you.
Yes, completely.
Mm. And yeah, inspiring and fearless. What about a course? Has there been a course that has inspired you?
You know, I was thinking about this one. I am always enrolled in something. Like, buying a course is like not a big deal to me unless it's really, really expensive. Buying a book is not a big deal to me because I'm a lifelong learner. I can't think of a specific one. I've just taken so many. I would probably say the PhD program I'm in now, like it's a lot of courses and it's really changing the way I think and making me a more critical thinker.
If you don't mind, what are you doing your PhD in?
So I'm getting my PhD in psychology so that the academic level research that we've been doing as a company, I actually can be the lead author on and disseminate more of the research by writing more journal articles.
Ah, interesting. I'll have to read some of your articles then. Very
interesting.
I haven't
written any yet.
Oh, okay. Well, keep me updated.
I will.
Yeah, interesting. I'd love to see that though. How do you define home organization?
So that is some of the original research that we've done. We've done three research studies, and obviously I don't have a PhD, so I hired somebody who has a PhD to guide me through this, and then we got an IRB through a university in Pennsylvania. And our first research was, what is the definition of housework? And then we did research on the weight of paper in American homes. And when we were doing that, we realized that one of the kinds of work that you do at home is home organization, but that home organization has not actually been defined in academia to this point. And so I created my own operationalized definition of home organization because 87% of Americans believe organization is a learnable skill. We've asked that in every single survey, and the number is 87 or 86%. So it's a very consistent result that we're getting. However, if you ask people if they are organized, they rarely say yes. And so if you believe something is learnable and yet you don't know how to do it, like, so what does it mean? Like, what does home organization mean? Like, that's the whole reason I'm getting a PhD is like to answer that question. What does it mean? And so I thought you need to be able to have a finish line to be able to say, I am organized. So I have defined home organization into four categories: personal organization, family organization, storage organization, and paper organization. And each of those has a definitive finish line. So you could say, I am personally organized and paper organized, but I'm still working on my storage and family organization.
Okay, so breaking it down into separate areas so you can actually put a target on there. Because something I do find about home organization is that it can feel quite large and unsurmountable.
Yes, I
am here because I want to learn more about that. And what about some common misconceptions that you've seen about home organization?
So there are a couple. One would be that people are trying to get an end picture in their head. Like they've seen a picture in a magazine or on a TV show or in a friend's house, and they think that if they can get their house to look that way, then they will be organized. Whereas organization is actually a feeling, and it is a practical being able to find things when you need them. It's not an aesthetic. That's decorating. And so we're using decorating as the finish line for organization, which is why you get it looking right, but then you go out and buy things because you can't find where they are. You don't remember what you could put in the really cute containers. I would say that's probably the biggest misconception about home organization.
Is home decorating and home organization, are they completely different beasts? Are they a bit interconnected?
I think they're 100% different, but I think that home organization is 99% of the time marketed as an aesthetic, as decorating.
Interesting. And something I did want to go back to as well was you said that most people think that organization is a skill that they can learn. After doing some research, do you think that it is a skill that everyone can learn?
100%. And I was so excited when we got our very first research study back, and it was just like a throwaway question that I asked at the very end. I had like a whole bunch of yes, no questions at the end. And one was, do you think that organization is a learnable skill? And I thought people are going to say no because, you know, they haven't succeeded. And the fact that 87% said yes, I'm like, okay, in America, we don't agree on anything, like nothing. But 87% of Americans believe organization is a learnable skill. And I feel that in that same study, we only had 13% say that they were personally organized, 14% said they were family organized. Like the numbers were so low that if you believe it's learnable and yet you're self-reporting that you have not succeeded, the problem is not you, the problem is the teacher. And so I started as a teacher and I taught kids that were at risk and I taught math. And those are areas that are, you know, difficult for children to succeed in sometimes. And I remember saying to the parents of the kids who were at risk that I taught, I said, your child cannot fail first grade. And at that time we did fail children in first grade. I said, it is impossible for your child to fail first grade. Only I can fail teaching your child what they need to learn in first grade. And I will come up with 8 different ways to teach whatever it is in order for them to learn. If they come ready to learn, I will teach them. And I think that's true. I think the onus is on the teacher to teach the skill, not the learner to absorb it, however the teacher wants to teach it. And so I've spent the last 12 years figuring out how do you teach the skill of home organization, which is why I, like you, have a podcast. Because when you listen to a podcast, and I'm talking about organizing your house, you're picturing your space in your house when I'm talking. If you're watching a TV show or a YouTube channel about organizing that same space, you're seeing that person's house and you're going, oh, I wish I had that big of a kitchen. I wish I had that much money. I wish I had those new pots and pans, instead of thinking about your space when you're organizing. So it's definitely learnable, but it's not a skill that you can learn like tying your shoes in a couple of weeks. It's a skill like learning a foreign language that takes, you know, 1 to 3 years to truly master.
That's so true. I never thought about it, but yeah, when I do watch those TV shows where they organize homes and decorate homes, I do say, oh, that's amazing. It's beautiful, but I don't have a house. I have an apartment. Right. I can't do this. Uh-huh. And so, yeah, it really does. Hold you back from being able to achieve. Whereas, yeah, podcasts are great because, as you said, you're not. It's like a book versus a movie. You know, you get to use your own imagination and put yourself into it.
Yes. And if you listen to podcasts like I do, like you're bouncing around your house anyway, and you're like, oh, well, maybe if I do try this way, or maybe I do try that. And so like you're like listening and actually doing in your own house instead of sitting and watching somebody else.
Exactly. Listen to podcasts and listen to podcasts about home organization and also home organize.
Yes.
That's so great. But so part of that, I believe, is time management. So can you explain what that is?
So I don't talk about time management a lot. I do a lot of time management processes. I think you have a certain amount of time in certain phases of life. So I mentioned my mom and how she's continually reinvented herself. I think that that's a more feminine characteristic to like every 10 years be a completely different person as a woman. Like my husband just celebrated 33 years of the same job. I'm like, wow. In those 33 years, I think I've had 14 careers because like I just pivot and shift for whatever our family needs or whatever, you know, I want to do. And so time management is harnessing the time that you have available for the goals that you have at that time. And one of the things that really is complex for whoever is the head of the household is that they have to manage the to-do list of the home as well as their paid work and their hobby work and their self-care and their parenting. If they're a parent, like there are just so many hats that they wear. You cannot do it all at the same time, but you can do it all over a lifetime. And so time management has to have that longer lens of time in addition to the 24-hour a day time frame.
Okay, so rather than trying to squish all of your responsibilities and desires and needs into one day, I guess just separating into, the bigger picture. That's really good. Because, I feel overwhelmed sometimes with all the things I need to do. And you mentioned to-do lists. So how do they help with time management?
So I used to have to-do lists that had to-do lists. And then I color-coded the to-do lists and I couldn't find my to-do list. And over time, I realized that I am so multi-passionate and I have so many responsibilities that it's not going to get done. Like, have you ever had a to-do list that you actually finished?
Yes.
Before you started the next one? Like every single thing was done on your to-do list. You had nothing left to do on your to-do list.
No.
Okay. That's happened to me twice. I can tell you the exact two times. It was when we were adopting our children. I remember the second time was when we were adopting our second child. We were supposed to be adopting her. I had everything ready and I was weeding our vegetable garden every single day. I was weeding it so much the weeds couldn't get big enough for me to pull them out. They were just like barely because I was done with my to-do list. It's the worst place actually to be. Like
really?
Your dream is to be done with your to-do list. It's horrible. It's boring. You don't know what to do. And then you just create chaos because you'd. So the goal has always been to complete the to-do list. Why? What are you going to do when you complete the to-do list? Why don't you just do that now and do the to-dos that you have time to do? So once I started realizing that I was never going to actually finish the to-do list, I needed to create a better system that would be able to ebb and flow with the to-dos that actually had to get done this week and the to-dos that were optional for this week so that if I had the energy or the inclination to do an optional to-do in the week that I had not slated that to-do, I could grab the information and do it. And that's how I created the Sunday basket.
Okay. And what is the Sunday basket?
So the Sunday basket is just I sell a box now that is the commercialized version, but it's just a basket that I had at home that I put all of my ideas and actionable to-dos in and errands and things I needed to run. And every Sunday, I go through the whole basket and everything that's in there, and I decide with the energy and time and resources that are available in the next 7 days, what things are going to come out of here and actually go on a manageable to-do list and be done by the end of the week.
Okay, so having two to-do lists, one optional and one non-optional.
Yes. So on Sunday, you actually do as many to-dos as possible. So like pay the bills, call and schedule, you know, to renew the prescription, give the dog the flea and tick, change out your filter and your HVAC, like all those things that be normally running on your to-do list. You like race the clock. How many can I actually just get done in an hour? Like not even put them on a to-do list, just like get them all done. And then there are some things that will be in that basket where you're like, okay, well, I actually have to wait till Monday because I have to call the doctor's office for this. Or I actually have to wait until, you know, Tuesday because I have to go to the bank and it's Sunday and the bank is closed. So there are a couple of things on your list on Sunday that you actually have to do the next week. But for the most part, you actually get all of the to-dos done on Sunday. You don't actually have a list during the week. Everything that can wait until Sunday must wait until Sunday. And then on Sunday, you give it a certain amount of time, however much time you have available. You do what's urgent and important and has to be done before the next Sunday. And you make your to-do list wait and wait and wait and wait and wait.
I love that, because what happens to me is I make a to-do list and then I finish most of the things and then I'm like, oh, I don't really want to do that one today. So then I move it to the next to-do list and then I move it to the next to-do list. And then it's been 3 months since I was supposed to book my eye appointment. And if I had, as you said, waited until Sunday and then just booked all of my doctor's appointments, then they would be done.
Yes. Yes. And when you do it that way and you're booking your doctor's appointments, then you're like, okay, well, I'm going to book my eye doctor appointment and my dentist appointment and my annual physical all at once. And I'm just going to take the day off work and I'm just going to do them all. And if that means you have to set those appointments 2 months out in order to get them all on the same day, it's more efficient, because that one day you're going to take off work and then maybe you also get a coffee and you also get your nails done, because you're like, you know what? I'm going to do all my self-care in one day. And then when you're there, you rebook those for 6 months or a year later. Now, all of a sudden, that's a habit that you're going to do on an annual basis, and it no longer is a to-do. It now becomes a habit. So the Sunday basket, when you're going through it, you get to manage your time and your money and your energy so that you do what has to be done and you defer what is optional. Because sometimes, now you should get your eyes checked, but sometimes your thing will be like, oh, I'm going to change my television provider from one service to the other because I can save $10. And I had a client who did this, and it was in her Sunday basket for 9 months. And finally she said, I'm never going to do this. And she just recycled it. And that's also freeing. Like, that's also a decision to just not even do it. And so you're going to do what's essential, but you're not just going to do things because you want to check them off the list so you don't have to see it anymore.
Definitely. Yeah, it's very freeing, I think, to be like, actually, this doesn't matter. I haven't done it in this long. That's why it doesn't matter. So I've talked to someone about ADHD and home organization in the past. And what she said was that to-do lists don't work for people with ADHD, or not in general anyway. And so it seems like what you're suggesting isn't really a to-do list. How does it affect people with ADHD? Have you seen anyone who's used it?
Yes, actually, we are doing a lot of research on that as well. With an ADHD doctor, we're going to do a study and test and see if what I have observed to be true is actually supported with research. And it is that when you have ADHD, not in every case, but in a lot of cases, it affects your executive function. And your executive function does organizing and planning and getting started, task initiation, all of these things. So what the Sunday basket does is it replaces your brain. So instead of trying to remember, I have to change the furnace filter, I have to change the furnace filter, oh yeah, give the dog the flea and tick medicine, it's in the Sunday basket. So on Sunday, you go through and you're like, oh yeah, the flea and tick box is in here and I'm going to give the flea and tick medicine. You don't have to try to remember it. So it is a non-to-do list way of doing to-dos, and it externalizes those executive functions so that your brain is freed up in order to do what you're uniquely created to do. The other thing is, you could have a to-do list, ADHD or not, you can have a to-do list, but is checking off items on a to-do list, when you look at a to-do list, actually the best use of your time? So the Sunday basket forces you on Sunday to say, okay, I'm going to spend 90 minutes or 3 hours or whatever it is on every single household-related task I can think of. And then starting Monday morning until the next Sunday, every single idea you have that you need to do around the house, you write on an index card and you throw it in the Sunday basket. You don't put it on the to-do list and do it. So can you imagine if you started Monday morning with no to-do list, everything's in the Sunday basket, and now you're free to just do your paid work and your parenting and your life, not household-related tasks. It's kind of like when we're kids, we have to clean our bedroom before we're allowed to go play on Saturday. But when we're adults, we make cleaning our bedroom a 24/7 occurrence. Whereas I'm putting it back into Sunday. Like, for this 90 minutes to 3 hours, you're going to do all your household related tasks. And then the rest of the week, you're going to be a wife, mother, worker, person, daughter, like scuba enthusiast or whatever you want to be, but not like perpetually chained to your house and the to-dos related to that.
That's great. Because yeah, it definitely feels overwhelming. And you know, I look around my house, oh, I've got this to do, I've got that to do, I can't do it all in one go. And then I just never do it. But yeah, waiting until Sunday, yeah, that feels like a weight off my shoulders. But I do have a question about what happens if you put off doing it on Sunday? Because that seems like something I would do.
That's a problem. That is a problem. It's not a magic basket. You definitely have to do it. And, you know, that is something that comes up in ADHD a lot also, like, we don't want to. Well, that's okay. I mean, you didn't want to brush your teeth when your parents were teaching you to brush your teeth either. We don't want to, you don't want to go get your eyes checked. That's why you haven't made your appointment. We don't want to eat our vegetables, but you're going to live longer if you do. Like, you don't have to want to do everything once you're adult. I think this is what happens. We're a kid and we have to clean our bedroom on Saturday morning before we're allowed to go play. It's a pretty universal occurrence. And then we decide in our little teenage heads that someday I'm going to be big enough that I'm going to own this house and nobody's going to be able to tell me that I have to clean my bedroom. So then we do. We grow up and we get our own apartment, condo, whatever we have. And then we're like, well, I don't want to. And so I shouldn't have to. Well, who's going to do it? Now you own the whole house. Congratulations. Now you don't have to clean your bedroom. You have to clean the whole house. So just take your medicine and do it. Pick the time that you're going to do it. So I do my cleaning on Saturday. I plan with my Sunday basket on Sunday. When home organizing is a different kind of work. The Pew Research Institute did a study in America about how long it takes to maintain a home each week. Not with children. How many hours do you think it is?
20 hours.
28.
28. That's over a day.
20. Yes. 20 without children. And you're like, how? And I was like, there's no way. That can't be true. So I time tracked how much time Greg and I spent, my husband and I spent 1 week just doing all the house related things. 32 hours. Because it's lawn care, it's laundry, it's dishes, it's cleaning, it's meal prep, it's shopping. It takes so much time. So if you have a more than part-time job, not including parenting, let's put some systems around this. Like, let's put some structure to it. Let's eliminate what we don't need to do, buckle down and get done what we need to do and work. And then feel free at 5 o'clock to go read a book because you know your work is done for the day. If you have a never-ending to-do list and we have more than 28 hours a week of work to do, you're never going to stop checking the to-do list and feel you have the permission to just go take a bath and read a book. You'll do it, but you'll be guilty while you do it.
Yes, and guilt is something I suffer from a lot.
Mm-hmm. This eliminates guilt.
I'd love that. Do you have any other, solutions or tips for people who are trying to implement this in their life?
For the Sunday basket specifically?
Or just in general in time management, either.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is you need to take your time back. The biggest things I heard growing up about time management were to only touch paper once. And if you could do it in 5 minutes or less, do it right away. And I think you should eliminate those two rules out of your head because doing just something that takes 5 minutes really sidetracks you. So thinking back to when I was a stay-at-home mom and the kids were young and they were coming home from school, I would be getting ready for dinner and I would also try to be, you know, like making sure they're going to get their homework done. And there's just so many things going on from that 4 to 6 o'clock time frame. And your child will bring you a toy that needs to have the battery changed. Now, you could change a battery in a toy in less than 5 minutes, right? So you're like, okay, can I do this in less than 5 minutes? Yes, so I should do it. No, you should not. Every time I did that, I burned dinner. It was a nightmare. I forgot to check their homework because whenever you are presented with something new, you are already doing something, always. Because you're never just sitting there going, I have absolutely nothing to do. I hope somebody just gives me something they want me to do. Similar to checking the mailbox and bringing in your mail. So you grab your mail and you're walking in. As you pull into the driveway and go to get your mail, you are thinking, I need to remember to change the laundry. Oh, I want to remember to put this in my car so I don't forget it for the errand tomorrow. And then you go and you walk to the mailbox and you grab your mail. Now, the rule is, if you can do it in less than 5 minutes, do it and only touch your paper once. So I literally would wrap myself in knots walking to the house going, I can only touch it once. So I'd be like sorting the mail as I walked into the house for what could be recycled and shredded right away. So I wouldn't accidentally have to process my mail multiple times. By the time I walked in the house, you know what I forgot to do? Put the thing in the car for the errand tomorrow. Because mm-hmm. I was so busy trying to figure out if my junk mail should be recycled or shredded. So now what I do is I pull in the driveway, I grab the mail out of the mailbox, and I drop it all in the Sunday basket. I don't even flip through it. You know why? Anything sent in the snail mail can wait until Sunday, guaranteed. Mm-hmm. And then I walk in, grab what I need to put in the car, and I keep going with my agenda. So all of these little interruptions, and even your brain can be an interruption, are derailing you from what you originally set out to do. And so the Sunday basket practice and learning to delegate other people's requests of you through text or email, or even they're handing you something, the mailbox, all of those things are distractions from what you're doing. And if you have systems to check those later, you'll get more done. And that is the best time management you can have.
So it seems like it's about establishing focus on one task at a time, rather than trying to multitask and or start one task and then flip to another task and then flip back to the original task.
That is so interesting. I've never heard it put that way, but that is true. So I was in a conference 1 year ago and I was listening to somebody talk about mindfulness. And I've never studied mindfulness before. I was like, oh, Lisa, you should pay attention because this is something people talk about all the time. Like, you should be a more mindful person. So she went through her whole thing, this whole activity that we were supposed to do. And then she was done. And she's like, and that's it. I'm like, well, where was the thing I was supposed to learn? And that's when I realized I am always mindful. And I was like, wow, how did I don't think anybody else can say that. My brain does not give me errant thoughts anymore. I'm always present. Like, we've been in this interview, I don't know how long, 30 minutes. I have not once thought anything other than the questions you're asking me and the answers, because my brain doesn't talk back to me anymore. Like, I write down every thought I have and take it captive, and then I stay fully present. So you're right. My focus and my ability to work, like, we're recording this at 8 o'clock at night. I've been working for a solid 12 hours and I'm not fatigued because I haven't gotten squirreled or sidetracked.
Amazing.
That's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, I'm studying psychology and we just did a whole unit about mindfulness and I totally see where you're coming from. And I mean, it's something that for me is something I'd like to achieve because I do find myself sort of split into two, three mind tracks sometimes. So I will be trying your method because I think that I would love to be mindful. And if I can not achieve that, but if this is one step towards that, why wouldn't I even try it?
Okay. So let me tell you this next thing and see what you think. Mm-hmm. So it started with the Sunday basket for me of delaying the actual tactical mail and all of that. Now I write down every thought I have. Like I write down index cards all the time so that I don't keep information in my head. Now you said you have multiple, basically hats that you're wearing, multiple people that you are. We are one person with so many possibilities of how we can spend our time and so many passions of what we want to do. I do not make my brain filter itself at all. It's allowed to have any thought it wants, and I pretty much write them all down. I don't even judge if it's a good idea or a bad idea until I write it down. And then if it's something that has to be done today or before Sunday, then I literally just hold the index cards because they're the size of my phone and I'll put them in my pocket or whatever. But the majority of them can wait. So if it's household related, it goes in my Sunday basket, which is at home. And if it's work related, it goes in my Friday workbox. And so that's the second thing is once you capture the idea, then looking at the idea and saying, oh, okay, is this something that happens that has to happen now? Is this something related to me as a homeowner? Is this something related to me as the entrepreneur? And then is it something related to me in getting my PhD? Is it something related to me as a grandma? Like, I'm all these things. So the second part is we have all these slash buckets that are inside of the basket. It comes with 25 and you can add more. And they have different colors that have different meanings. So all of these things that I write down ideas for, it might be for a podcast that I want to do or a future book that I want to write or somebody that I met that I would like to have a collaboration with like years from now. I could take that information and put it in a slash pocket and then label that category of that slash pocket and then hold that information for when I need it in the future. And so the idea is captured, but it's not weighing on me and it doesn't get on a to-do list. A lot of what used to be on my to-do list was actually aspirational or ideas that I didn't want to lose.
I find that I, on my phone, I'll take notes. You know, I have to do this today, or I can't forget to do this next week. Or I would like to read this book one day. And then it sort of goes on my phone and it sort of drifts off into the ether because I can't remember what it's for. It's not categorized for me to remember. You know, I'll have a title of something, but I don't know if it's a movie, a book, or something else.
Yes, I am not good with digital. I mean, I run my whole company digitally. I'm very tech savvy. We're building a new website and I was working with the programmer. I was like, okay, go to this tab. Like, I actually am very tech savvy, but it is not a good place for me to put a to-do list because if I can't see it, it doesn't exist. I'm not good at searching. I'm good at searching on the internet, but not searching in my email. Like, I actually print out my emails because when I'm planning or I'm doing my time management, I love to be able to see it. Like when I'm going to record my podcast, like you, I had printed out the email you sent me. I printed out the questions you were going to ask me. When I'm working on my own podcast, I look at what I just recorded a series on, all the possibilities of index cards that I've saved. I'm like, what energy am I in? What season are we going into? Oh, I'm going to pull these index cards. I'm going to create a podcast series on this. And some of my index cards stay in my podcast folder for years, like years. And then I'm like, oh, now's the time to record that podcast series. Where do you put stuff like that? And to-do lists, you don't need to see it over and over and over again. But when I am ready to record podcasts, I need to see all those possibilities. When you are ready to do holiday shopping, like you may be getting ideas for people where they're like, oh my gosh, I really need a new toaster. Or you're like, they need a new toaster. Where do you write that down? So it's when their birthday or it's when the holidays that you celebrate that you remember. And they're going to be like, how did you remember I need a toaster? It's kind of a joke gift. But I love doing that at the holidays, giving people things that they mentioned like 6 months earlier. And they're like, how did you? I have a way of writing that down and remembering it when I need it without having to do a search for it later.
That's great because, yeah, people always mention what they want for Christmas or for their birthday or just in passing. By the time it comes around,
you can't remember
any of it.
I know.
That's great.
And then you just spend money you don't have on things they don't need. Oh, I would so much rather buy them the toaster and then laugh and then actually use it 3 times a week than buy them like some new fancy something that they're never going to use, you know?
Or the other option where you have to think of a list and send it to people, but it's not surprising anymore.
Right, right.
Which is what my family do. You just tell each other what we want. So what are some other challenges for time management and to-do lists, or have we covered them all?
I think we've gotten a good start. I think that, you know, we tend to fritter away our time. For me, it's Instagram. I'm obsessed with Instagram. I love to spend time on Instagram. I probably spend more than an hour a day on Instagram, which maybe isn't a lot of time, but it's a lot of time, I think. I enjoy that. But when we are not so overwhelmed and full of anxiety and depressed, then you start to have more capacity to do more during the day. Like if you don't like your job, it's everything you can do to get up, get showered, go to that job, come home, and then recover so you can do it again tomorrow. And I know many, many people who live that existence, and you're doing it for the paycheck and you're doing it for the benefits and you're doing it for your family. And that is admirable. And thank you for doing it. But if you can break that, like no matter what you are doing, I like to say that you are only in control of you. You're not in control of your employer. You're not in charge of your children or your spouse or your parents or your neighbors or the president or whoever, like, or the king. You're not in charge of any of those things. You can only change you. And once you really realize that and really just start focusing on you, you're like, okay, I want to be healthier. All right, pick one meal. How can you make one meal healthier? Okay, I want to have more time to read. Okay, how much time? 15 minutes. Okay, where in the day can you squeeze in 15 minutes? Then you get consistent with that. Okay, I want to improve my my skin and my wellness. Okay, what supplement do you want to start? Take that for 6 weeks. Okay, what additional supplement do you want? And it's these little teeny tiny changes that over a decade, all of a sudden you're someone like me that I used to by 10 o'clock be ready for a nap and I was exhausted. And now I could go 12 hours and I can keep going. Like, I'm not tired. I'm energized. And it's because I changed the habits over time for me. And I'm going to keep going back to this because as women, we tend to put everyone else before us, especially if we have children. But even if you don't have children, you'll put your neighbors, your sisters, your parents, your spouse, your employer. You'll put everyone before yourself. And if you are trying to be a better person for yourself, you actually are better for everyone around you too. And it's not selfish to take 5 minutes for this and 15 minutes for this. And over time, you become a more positive, productive person. When I started Organize 365, I was the most negative, depressed, overweight person I've ever been in my entire life. You would not want to interview me. You would not have been my friend. I was at the end of a 7-year slide into the pit of despair. My parents had gotten divorced, and then my dad got sick, and then he passed away, and then we had to sell the family home, and the kids were sick, and just like, we were out of money. It was a country song. It was just bad all around. And I wanted someone to come save me. I wanted the government to give me money. I wanted, like, I just was like, help me, save me. And I was pathetic. I was just not, it was not great. And I finally realized that I could only save myself. And so I often say that only you can save yourself. You can learn to be organized 15 minutes a day. It's going to take 3 years. It's okay. Get started. 3 years from now, you'll be happy you started. It's still going to take 3 years from now. If you wait 3 years, 10 years, whatever. Like, you can learn the skill, but it's not someone else. It's not when you have more money. It's not, it's you. Like, you are the only person that can work on you, and you take you with you the rest of your life. So it is worth finding the time management, but then using the time that you free up for you, for your personal and professional development and the person that you want to be when you grow up.
Thank you for sharing that. Thank you. So you're saying that take control of yourself. It's you can only control yourself. And that the small habits is sort of how you build up from where you are now to who you want to be.
Yes.
Mm. And I think the thing you said, three years is, well, if, you know, for example, 3 years, if it takes to build up a habit or to move on to who you want to be. But those 3 years can pass so quickly. I found with COVID, I think if I had started a new language at the beginning of COVID, I would probably be quite good at it now, but I didn't.
Yes. The time will pass no matter what. And it's 3 years to get your home completely organized, like to get it all the way organized. It takes anywhere from 18 months to 3 years. Mm. And I I'm 50. So I've been observing for a long time, and I'm very observant of large families, different generations and all of that. And I have noticed in my own life and in others that it usually takes about 3 years. And the first 18 months is just changing your mindset and observing and pretending. And I call it passive organizing. Like, oh, what do I want to have matching bins? Do I want to do this? Like, you're just kind of liking yes, no, yes, no. And then the second 18 months, other people start to see that you're making the changes, because now you're like, okay, well, I've got my closet organized, and now I have my desk organized, and now I have my kitchen organized. And people are like, oh, I see you're starting to organize. But actually, you started 2 years prior, because they don't really notice until you're 6 months into the physical organizing, but the mental started 18 months ago. So usually it takes about 12 to 18 months of physical organizing, but first you do a year to 18 months of mental organizing. So if you think about paying off debt or getting in shape or going back to school or changing your job, usually there is a long runway where it's secret and it's just in your own head and you're playing, well, what if? Well, if I did this, and you're going to bed thinking about, well, if I did that, this would happen. And you're not even telling anyone that you're thinking about it. And some of these ideas, like going back to school, come and go, and then you just don't do it. And then later you start saying, hey, I'm thinking that maybe I'll go back to school, or I'm thinking about applying for a new job, or I'm thinking about moving to a new place. And you start trying it on with other people to see what their reactions are. Do they think you can do it? Would they support you? What feedback do they have? Do they have suggestions about how you would do it? And then you mull over that, and then you start to take action in whatever it is that you want to do. And I've just kind of observed it's 18 months of the thinking and the mindset and 18 months of the doing.
That's so interesting. I never considered that the thinking part would be an important aspect of, yeah, creating a new habit, getting organized in your home. That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. These are all things that I want to, like, I have observed them and I intuitively know that they would be supported by research. Maybe there's already research out there, so I need to look into the literature more. But also, if there's not, I would love to, I don't even know how you would do it, but in the next 30 years, I want to do a lot of research. And these are all the things that I want to either find research that already supports that, yes, it's 18 months and 18 months, or somehow conduct studies that would start to have this conversation in academia so other researchers can also be doing these kind of studies. And we can really build this body of knowledge specifically around how we use our time at home. There's so many studies about how you use your time at work and school and parenting and all that. But there's very, very little research around us as humans in homes. And the truth is, we'll be in homes our entire lives. Like, we spend our entire lives at home. There's very little scaffolding there. There's very little structure. And I just think it's worthy of research being done.
Definitely. And I'm looking forward to seeing all of your research in the next 30 years.
Yes, there'll be a lot.
Great. I'm excited. So is there a practice that you do in your own life, in your own time, to manage yourself and your house and your time?
I think, I do the Sunday basket. I do a lot of dreaming. Like, I do a lot of dreaming. So when I was a child, I just wanted to get married and have children. I just wanted to be a mother. Like, that's all I wanted my entire life, was to be a mother. So I went to college. I got 2 degrees, but I also got married. That was mainly what I was going for. I was going for my MRS degree, Mrs. Woodruff. So I got that. And then we were not able to have children, so we adopted our children. And once we had our 2 children, I was turning 30, and I realized that all the dreams I had set for myself, I had achieved. Like, I was now a mom of 2 kids, and I was a stay-at-home mom, and I was married. And that was, like, my dream. And I was like, oh, well, I'm going to live longer, so I probably need more dreams. And so I poured myself into being the best stay-at-home mom and mother that I could be. And then I had a dream of starting a business. And then I had a dream of starting a podcast. And then I had a dream of being a manufacturer. And now I have a dream of getting a PhD. And I guess the practice is to, I found out how to dream again. And now the dreams I have are being manifest so quickly, as I have a hard time coming up with the next one. And I think that that's fun. Because once you become a parent, you're so invested in the dreams of your children becoming a reality, you kind of stop dreaming for yourself. And at least for my friends, as our children, as we've become empty nesters and our kids have started their lives, there's been a little bit of rust, you know, that we have to break off in order to get in the groove of giving ourselves the permission to dream again and want to do something that is just for ourselves. It feels very selfish to do something that might just be for yourself. Like, getting the PhD feels very selfish because it takes a lot of time away from the family. They're not thrilled about that. But my husband has quickly realized, he's like, this is really going to be big when you're done with this. And he is feeling the sacrifice because he is getting less time from me. And how awesome is that, that he wants to spend more time with me? And getting a PhD is not just for me, because I'll disseminate the research, so it will be for the greater good. But right now, it feels very selfish. And so I think that that is the practice of realizing that you're allowed to have dreams your entire life. And just communicate to other people around you about those dreams, and start to have, like, start with manageable dreams that you could start and finish and achieve. And then the next dream and the next dream and the next dream. Don't dream something so big that would take you a decade to accomplish it. And then you're like, oh, well, that was exhausting. I don't want to have another dream. Like, you can have a dream to go away for a weekend. You can have a dream to organize your kitchen. You can have a dream to read 12 books this year. Like, start with things that you start to achieve as success, and then just dream bigger and bigger dreams.
That's so lovely. That's so lovely to encourage everyone to dream and achieve their dreams, but also that your family are very supportive of you and your dreams.
They're kicking and screaming, but I'm doing it anyway.
Okay, maybe supportive, but also challenging.
Well, it's not normal. Not normal. And I think, you know, especially for my husband's generation of men, like they kind of like he's had the same job for 33 years. Like I thought I get married, I have children, I become a stay-at-home mom. He thought I get married and then my wife is at home. Well, the kids left. I'm like, what do you think I'm going to do? Watch the dog all day? Like, I'm not a stay-at-home housewife. The kids are gone. I'm there's nothing to parent here. I'm going to go start my own company. And so one of the things I do, it's kind of a joke. So he'll be like, why do you have to go to school tonight or something like that? And I'll say, what I hear you saying is, I'm so excited that you're getting this PhD and it's so amazing that your first term is done and we only have X more terms to go and it won't be fun. And he's like, yeah, that. And so sometimes I just rephrase it because you have to, like, we're in community with people. So you have to acknowledge everyone's feelings. But also, if you're going for something big, go for it. And then, you know, help your family reframe it as to why it's good for them too. Like, it would not serve anyone for me to be a stay-at-home housewife right now at the age of 50. I mean, it's not what I should be doing.
Yeah, I see that. And that's what I tell my cat every day when I leave for work. And he's like, why are you leaving? And I'm like, I have to buy you food. I reframe it for him, even though he's a cat.
That's right.
So was there anything that we missed that you wanted to talk about?
I think just recognizing, you know, just dream again like you're a little kid. Like, believe in yourself as much as you believe in everyone else. Organization is a learnable skill. No one is really teaching organization for organization's sake. So just like even what we talked about with the Sunday basket, like if you have believed that you should have a to-do list and your goal is to get the to-do list done and you're recognizing, just like Gabriella realized that, oh, I never actually have gotten the to-do list done. Like, okay, well, when are you going to say enough is enough and you're allowed to read a book tonight or you're allowed to watch a movie or you're allowed to scroll your Instagram? Like, bucket the good, self-care and the zone out time that you want as much as you bucket the to-do list. Because, so I'll take it back to COVID. When I have cleaned houses and I've had my house cleaned, and when COVID started, we were having someone clean our house, which obviously ended very quickly. And obviously I had to clean my own house again, which I'm clearly capable of doing. I noticed dust on week 7 because I had not been dusting. So what I say to you is this. We are judging our home making and our housekeeping based on what we see on TV or what we remember that our parents did or what we think that our spouse wants instead of what our house actually needs. So if you are dusting any more frequently than every 6 weeks, you are over dusting. What else are you overdoing at home because you think that it's going to give you an A? No one's grading you. No one even knows what you're doing. Get rid of half of it. Like, stop doing almost everything that you normally do. And then when it starts to bother you, do it. Or when somebody else at the house mentions it, do it. So I'll tell you about dishes. I'm the one that does dishes at home. I don't do the cooking anymore. I did it for 20 years. I'm not very good at it. My husband's way better than I am. So he does the cooking. We eat out a lot. But I do the dishes. And I'm working a lot and going to school and everything. I only do dishes 3 times a week.
Wow.
So I do dishes like Wednesday night because our house gets cleaned up Thursday. I usually do it like Saturday morning and Sunday night. Now, there are dishes in the sink almost all of the time because as soon as you do the dishes, somebody makes something and puts a spoon in the sink. Like, it's a never-ending thing. It's like laundry. And I determined that I used to get frustrated with my family because they used kitchen utensils, which is ridiculous. And I thought, you know what? No one is reminding me to do the dishes. And no one is voluntarily doing the dishes, so I can do it whenever I want. So I do it Wednesday night, Saturday morning, Sunday night. Occasionally, a family member will decide they want to do the dishes, but it's rare. And no one ever says, hey, mom, you got to go do the dishes. No one ever says that. So you decide how often you want to do the housework. And then the options are, if it bothers somebody else in the house, they can do it, or they can just wait for you to do it. But you don't have to do it on a timetable that you imagine it's happening in some other house. So if you think, oh, Lisa must have it all together, just remember I'm only doing the dishes every 3 times a week.
I love that. I wish I could do the dishes only 3 times a week, but we don't have that many dishes. So we would have to do it more than that. But I 100% agree with, cleaning the house only as much as it actually needs to be cleaned. Like once it starts to bother you, if it's not bothering you, it's not bothering anyone else, there's no point.
Uh-huh.
That's it's a philosophy to live by, I think. Thank you.
Yeah, I think we're making things on our to-do list to check off on our to-do list that don't even need to be done.
Yes, definitely. I'll have to look at my to-do list and put a big X through it.
Yes, do that. It's so freeing.
Yay, thank you. So we've also got our open mic section, and that's where you get to talk about something that you're passionate about, but it doesn't necessarily have to be related to our topic today. Do you have anything that you were thinking about?
I think I've been open miking an awful lot during our conversation. I have so many things that I'm passionate about. I really can't think of anything else.
Okay, we'll just move on. Thanks for listening. Thanks for talking to me today and sharing your secrets with our listeners. The Sunday Basket sounds very achievable, actually. And I'm looking forward to trying that out. I've got a basket in my head picked out now. But if people want to find out more about you, I think you said you had a website, a podcast. Where can they find you?
Yeah, so I'm organized 365 everywhere. As I said, I'm obsessed with Instagram, and it's organized with a Z. The podcast is called Organized 365, and the website is Organized 365. And you can also find our free 5-day mini course that'll help you set up your own Sunday basket on your own if you don't want to get the Organized 365 official Sunday basket.
Okay, I'll have to give that a go. And if people want to find out these links, I will put them in the show notes so it's easy to find. Thank you for coming and joining me today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Room by Room, produced by the Home Organization Science Labs, a division of LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. More episodes like this from across 10 life management perspectives can be found by searching LMSL on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube, and any other podcasting apps available on your smart devices. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating, sharing, and subscribing to our channel, as it helps other people to find it so we can grow and continue to bring you quality resources. More of our work can be found on our website, ho.lmsl.net, where you can join our movement. I'm Gabriella Yastra, and thanks for tuning in.